Okay. Welcome everyone to our session about Nano Server, the next generation server, cloud server in your data center. Well, the session is going to be that small like Nano Server is, but
actually, when we did our rehearsal, we completed the session in 4 or 5 minutes. So it's a super small, fast session on Nano.
Okay, so my name is Thomas Maurer. I work as a cloud architect for ITNetics. Have been there for 3.5 years now. Looking forward for the 4th year. And I'm also a Microsoft MVP for Hyper-V. How about you, Christian?
Yeah, thank you. So my name is Christian Nies, CTO at Lumagate, and also a Microsoft MVP within the cloud. Apologize. Cloud and data center management space. And my responsibility or my job is to basically work with whatever's new and see how we can leverage it in the context of our customers. So that's probably why I'm here today with Thomas to talk about Nano Server. So before we start, I'm quite interested to know how many of you have heard of Nano Server and actually been testing it. Can I see some hands on how many have been testing it?
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good. Quite a few hands.
10% at least, that's good. And how many of you have been are actually using Server Core today? 30% or so? Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So you're in the right session. if the clicker works. So we are going to talk a little bit about challenges we have right now in the cloud environments, right? We're going to see that public cloud examples. We're going to see some examples for private cloud and hybrid cloud scenarios where we have challenges and that basically are reasons for Nano Server. Then we will have a look at the Microsoft Server journey. So how did we get there? How did we get there where we are today? And we will also talk a little bit about Nano Server deployment. And Christian will have some awesome demos. We promise that.
really?
Yeah. Okay. About Nano Server deployment and management on that thing as well. And then we'll talk a little bit about more of insights of Nano Server as well. So let's start. I think in April, Microsoft officially announced the existence of Nano Server. There were some announcements before already in March. Some leaks got out, and we know that there was Nano Server in there. So, but why do we need Nano Server? That's the basic question, and I think that's the most important question about Nano Server. There is a lot of technology going on, and it's very, very interesting, and it's good to know what you can do with Nano Server and what you can't, but the most important thing is about understanding the need of Nano Server. So what customers are telling Microsoft is that businesses, reboots from patches and everything, is a big impact on the business. If I'm talking to customers and if I'm looking forward how they ask me all the same thing, how do I patch my servers and how do I automate that? How do I manage that? And that has a huge impact on business and they spend so much time in like just thinking about how they can do it and less patches would perfectly make sense, right? Same for example, for Azure. If they have to have patched the hosts, your VM is down, right? So you always have to have two VMs, for example, two instances of the VM to get the SLA, and that's same for, of course, for other customers. Another thing is server images are too big, right? Today, when we deploy a virtual machine with VMM, we have, for example, or Windows Azure Pack, we have templates. Which do automate most of the things and which are very easy to deploy, which really speed things up. But then we have this copy process, right? Copying the image from the library to the server takes a lot of time and takes a lot of network bandwidth, right? And the last thing is, if you run a cloud environment, you probably have set up System Center, right? And you probably were like thinking about, how many servers do I need, even to get started with System Center? And it's around 20, 30 infrastructure server which you need for your cloud. And if you look at that, most of the applications which are running, they do not consume so many resources. But the base OS, for example, does take a lot of space on disk. It uses RAM, it uses CPU, all that kind of stuff which we don't really care about. It just has to be there, and it doesn't really make sense to have it there. It's no value, right? Okay, and there's another important part here, security. So one of my favorite companies here is also on the list, Sony. I think they got hacked like 2 or 3 times and were in the public. I think one of the reasons they had this issue was not patching their Windows servers. I think that was one. I couldn't find the article anymore. But one was like the problem they didn't really patch. So with big servers and components you don't need, you add an attack surface, right? It's getting bigger and, you make yourself really attackable. So I found this tweet from Jeffrey Snower, which is the lead architect of Windows Server and System Center today, and also founder of PowerShell, and I think one of the most important guys behind Server Core and Nano Server and things, how we manage stuff. So he thinks, and I totally agree with that, if you use a server, just make it the propose for the server, do not install anything else on that server, right? It's not like you have to have everything installed on the server. One example for when I started at ITnetworks, I was at a small business, very small business, and what they did was like installing Java on every single server, just in case they needed. There was no reason, but they did. So that's one thing. So we need something else. We need something more to do that. We needed some change there to solve that problem, right? They're not going away with the current situation. Good. Let's have a look at the Microsoft Server journey, about how things developed. There was Windows NT, Windows Server 2000, Windows Server 2003, which, I think in Windows NT was basically the same version as the client. I think Mark Rusinovich found that registry key where he could make a client to a server and change it back, and probably that's the reason Microsoft did an update and things like that, but he found it again and again. I think that's one of the reasons why they hired him. And then we had that big domestic big change with Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2, where we had like the introduction of Server Core. At this point of time, we couldn't really switch between Server Core and Full Server. We really had to choose, I'm going with Server Core, I'm going with Full Server, and I couldn't really go back or something. Well, that was one of the reasons a lot of customers still were using Full Server, right? Because they thought, if I can, maybe in the future I will need the full UI. So they did, so a lot of customers decided to go with Full Server. And another good reason for going with Full Server in that time was, PowerShell was nowhere. There was PowerShell, but you didn't have any commandlets, for example, for Hyper-V. You had no commandlets for clustering and things like that, which made it really difficult to manage. And then there was Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 with the current release, which had actually had like 3 different scenarios. It's not just Server Core and Full Server. There's something in between, which is called the minimal server interface, or mini shell, which is basically just the core server with some admin UIs. And then you can, the good thing here, you can switch between all of those just by adding a Windows feature or removing a Windows feature. Okay, what are the reasons why we need Nano Server, or why Microsoft needs Nano Server? One thing is Azure. So one of the things you realize if you're deploying Azure services or Azure VMs and instances, sometimes you get that message that your server will be down for maintenance, so because they're patching the host, the Hyper-V host, in the data center. And then they say, yeah, OK, you only have one instance of that server. You're going to be down during that time. That's one thing. And if you operate a large data center like Microsoft does with Windows, with Microsoft Azure, That's a huge effort to patch those systems, right? If you're copying files between all those different kind of servers, you need a lot of network bandwidth. You need also large storage spaces. You have to have that space and all that kind of stuff. Another reason Microsoft realized we need something different is the CPS, the Cloud Platform System. So who in the room has heard of CPS? Good, perfect. Who has a CPS? Okay, just in case, no one. Just kidding. Well, CPS is the Microsoft Cloud Platform System. It's basically they made the whole system center stack and Windows Server, Hyper-V, and storage spaces available on Dell hardware in a fully pre-configured box, which you can order from Microsoft, and they will ship it to you, installed Windows Azure Pack with ready with Operations Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, DPM in place. Funny side note, I think there are like 16 DPM servers in that systems, right? Okay. So what's interesting is, first of all, it takes a lot of time to set things up, right? If you deploy new servers, copying the images, that's one thing. But then you have these numbers. A fully loaded CPS can host, I think, around 4,000 VMs. It's like 4 racks, so you have like 1,000 VMs per rack. And if you have a fully loaded CPS system, this will move, if you do patching, automated patching, it will move around 16 terabytes of data during that, for just one patch to move that around. Not the patch itself, but moving the VMs from one host to another. And there is also some things about that. You have like the reboots take a long time. You see the numbers here. 2 minutes for compute hosts, for Hyper-V hosts, and 5 minutes for the storage nodes, which is also a lot of time. And all that things like disk space, as well as time, as also network traffic and everything, you really don't want to use that to just keep the infrastructure running, right? You want to use that for your applications. And that's the key here. And you see that we need a smaller offering here. So there must be something like cloud-optimized solution for that. And this is NanoServer. So NanoServer will be the next step in the Microsoft Cloud journey. We will see how this turns out. First of all, NanoServer is a 64-bit headless server. The most important word on that thing here is headless. So if you boot up NanoServer, if you install NanoServer, you do not really have a UI. You cannot log in directly on the box. There's nothing there. It's just showing maybe some information about IP and name, but there is nothing there. So you cannot log in. Then you have two things which Microsoft was focusing on. It's not that NanoServer is the option for everything. NanoServer is very dedicated to two things right now. One is the Cloud OS infrastructure, or the Cloud Platform infrastructure, which means Hyper-V hosts and storage hosts. So you can run Hyper-V on NanoServer. You can run containers on NanoServer and things like that. And you can, of course, run scale up file server on NanoServer. And the other thing is, applications born in the cloud, how Microsoft calls it. It's the really applications designed for platform as a service. And that's the other thing which Microsoft uses NanoServer for, or plans to use NanoServer. The idea here is, again, doing a little bit like the core server, starting from NanoServer, from core server, removing all the things you don't need, and just have like the minimalistic system you can have with Windows. So if you look at that, that's basically it, what's coming in Windows Server 2016, or what they're planning to do. And you can see that NanoServer here again, the first release of NanoServer will be a not upgradable version. So you have this NanoServer, and you cannot move it around to Server Core or upgrade it to full server. NanoServer will be different. So that's one thing to remind here when we talk about that. Let's talk a little bit about roles and features. First of all, if you install NanoServer, there is nothing on there, right? There is nothing, no roles and things. You cannot hot add, just add a feature. You have to prepare the image of NanoServer before you go over that. And I think Christian will show you a little bit more about that and tell you a little bit more about that, how you do that. As I said, key roles for NanoServer, Hyper-V, storage, clustering, all that kind of stuff. So the CloudOS infrastructure. And of course, this born in the cloud applications, ASP.NET 5, and all the platform as a service solutions. The great thing here is full Windows Server driver support. So there's nothing special going on there. You can use the drivers you can use for Windows and can make it work. And it has built-in anti-malware like all the Windows Server 2016 SKUs will have. And they will also add, I think they thought a little bit about that, but they added agents for System Center as well. They realized that someone is using System Center. Okay, so NanoServer in Windows Server 2016 will be like an option, like an install option if you do it in the future. Today, it's a little bit different. You have to download the ISO file, prepare. There is no kind of like option there right now, but it will be an option in the future. And if you're today deploying NanoServer, you download the Windows Server image, and you have this folder called NanoServer on that image, and you can there, you have the files in there, and Christian will show you a little bit more. So if you want to try it out, you can download Technical Preview 3 now, NanoServer is in Technical Preview 2, and now it's Technical Preview 3. Okay. Installing drivers, I think Christian will show things like that, so it's just for your reference. As you can see, it's the normal DSM command, so before you deploy the server, you prepare the image and you deploy that. So you do add drivers to that image, you do add roles and features, and then you're going to deploy. That's the most important change. It's not that, okay, let's install Windows and then add features or drivers later on. And of course, you can also do that in a VM. You have also drivers for a VM for NanoServer. Okay, you have different features. As I said, they're coming. Some of them where you can add like Hyper-V, the compute package, for example. So you add the Hyper-V role before you deploy it. Going not through the commands here. One thing to remember. There will be no MSI support, so all the things which you install with MSI won't work on NanoServer. And it has some other things there. It has another installer. There will be kind of like, they will not removing it because it's not their MSI, but they will have another support for that for application deployment. So, okay, sorry about that. So if you want to start, you can use that, and you have this file. If you download the ISO file, you have the Vim file for NanoServer, and then you can use a converter tool or converter PowerShell script to create a VHD, and you can then start up that VHD. Okay, so Christian will show you all the magic I'm talked about in some demos.
All right. So do me a favor, stop breaking the internet, because the demo is, I need to RDP into the session here. So bear with me. So what exactly is Nano and how do we deploy it? If you've been testing the different technical previews, it has been a struggle to deploy Nano, to be honest. But now things are at least getting better. So I just want to point you in the right direction when it comes to do deployment and what you should do and what you can do, basically. So when you mount the media today, the Windows Server image, you can see that on the media itself, we have a folder containing NanoServer. So within that folder, we now have different packages. We have the image itself, but we also have, as you can see, we have two PowerShell scripts. They are very important in order to prepare the image for Nano.
So I'll get back to that. But we also see the packages. So as Thomas said, the server roles and features, they basically live outside of Nano. If we compare it to Server Core and Windows Server, I don't know the right term anymore, desktop GUI or something like that, we're not allowed to call it full server.
Yeah,
for some reason.
I think it's desktop experience.
Yeah, you get what I mean, right? So if you compare it to that edition, all the servers they have, all the binaries, all the requirements available on disk. All the files for the different roles and features are present in the server. So you just need to turn them on or off or whatever you need. So think of that in a cloud context when you do deployment of virtual machines. You are always transporting those images containing those files regardless if your customers need it or not. With Nano, it's different. We keep it outside. So here we can see the different packages that we have available right now. So here you also can see the different user scenarios for Nano. And the things that I would point out during this session is especially around compute, failover clustering, and also storage. So if you summarize that, you basically have Nano as an ideal candidate for running your infrastructure. Your fabric workload can be placed onto a Nano server. What's also interesting is that we have a container package. Currently in this build, it doesn't work. So don't spend too much time on it. We can probably get into containers later as well. But these are sort of the packages that you can add into the Nano server image. Storage Spaces Direct is part of the storage package, as you see here. So thanks for bringing that up. So going back to the image, we have these scripts. I just want to show you how to create the image. In this folder, I have basically placed the script. So I have dot sourced the script into this PowerShell session. Basically entered the, I need a password, and I'm here using splatting for your convenience to make it easier to read. So I'm specifying the media path, the base path, and the target path where I eventually will place the VHD that I'm creating. And here you can see I'm adding the computer. I also pre-provisioning the computer object into Active Directory. I add the clustering package. I add the storage package. And also, I would like to run this Nano as a virtual machine, so I need to include the guest drivers as well for virtual machine. I join it to the domain. I specify the language pack and enable the remote management port. So I'm just going to run this. And this is basically what you'll do when you get started with Nano. You need the scripts, and you provision and create the new image. So this will basically take some minutes. So during this step, I'm basically adding whatever I need into the image. However, you can do that manually as well afterwards, if you like. So this is some commandlets that shows that we're using Dism in order to add the packages. So right now, I think that this package is missing compute. Let's see. Let's take Defender. Let's try that one. So I create a new folder. Let's see what I have. I have SKU demo. Right. Oh. Okay, so I'm not good at typing. Let's try again. So I mount the image, and then I will add the, let's try this one, the guest package. Not sure if it's already there or not, but let's see.
anyhow, you get the idea that what's going on there. You find the package you need, you add it into the image, and once you're done, you commit the changes, and then you are ready to basically use that image. Right? So successfully, we're going to commit the change and unmount the image, and then we can sort of copy that to wherever we like. If we go back to this session, you can see that this is still taking some time to prepare that image. So this is basically the longest nano experience you can have creating the image. So I get back to what we're doing with the nano server afterwards, but that's basically it. So right now, when you deploy nano, you need to go through this process. It's not a UI experience when you install the media to select nano server. So, but it will be a deployment option.
Okay, perfect, thank you. So, if you are deploying that and nano server, you also have to manage that. Now, how do you manage a server with no UI, right? You do that remotely. And that's the thing about Microsoft. They really want us to manage server remotely. That's one important lesson you have to think about. They don't do that because they want to make our lives like making it harder. They really want us to manage that for security, for example, for security reasons and make our lives easier. So about management, no one is sitting in front of a server anymore because it can't do it anymore. You have PowerShell desired state configuration. You have PowerShell remoting in there. You have like the WMI things which you can remote into that box. And of course, you also they also have integrated things in, for example, Visual Studio and things like that to deploy applications directly to that server. So talking about core PowerShell, NanoServer does not run the full PowerShell experience. This PowerShell is called Core PowerShell, and it's based on the Core CLR. And it does miss some of the PowerShell commands we are used to, which are built on some of the things which aren't there in NanoServer. So some of the things you have won't work on NanoServer right now. They are adding more PowerShell commandlets to it. We'll see how much they have to rewrite some of them, so we'll see how much they will do. But of course, the most important things are there. You also have, like, of course, scripting support, C# support, everything you need. But you have, as I said, there will be a limited list of commandlets working with NanoServer. Okay, but so how we manage then when we don't have everything? So we have. It's always good to have a UI, right? So it does make sense to have kind of a UI. It's not a bad thing, but it's bad on a server. So there will be a web-based HTML5 UI, and I will show you a little bit later on that. It's not released right now, but we have some print screens to show you. This includes some of the things we really like about Windows, right? Task Manager, Registry Editor, Event Viewer, and Device Manager, for example. Things we just need to see, which are hard doing commandlets on that. So. This is one thing. And this is how it looks like. It kind of looks like the new Azure portal, kind of. So what we see here, I hope you can all see it, is, for example, how you manage server, how you can rename a server, how you could like change usernames and passwords on that server. You can change the network configuration, do some changes there. You will have kind of like a task manager, so you can see which process is running on that and how much resources he uses. As I said, some processes here. And maybe the coolest thing I've ever seen. No, okay, not, but a web-based registry editor. So you can do your registry editing in a web-based UI. You can do it from your iPad, whatever you want. From your Windows phone, if you think you need to change a registry key, you can do that. So let me just quickly say something to the web-based UI. This is not installed on the server, on the nano server. So if you deploy it, you cannot just like go, for example, if you have all those kind of server operating systems, you connect via HTTP to them. That's not how it works. You install that remote management web-based web server somewhere, and you add the nano service to it. Right? Just making sure about that. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense if you already have that. So what about applications? As I said, we can use it as an infrastructure server, but we can also deploy applications on it. This will not support all Windows applications, of course, but it will support some of them, some of the old Win32 apps we have. But they're basically really going for that new cloud stuff, using ASP.NET 5, Core CLR, and all that kind of scenarios. So where can you install that? Where can you run it? Some guys just told me, yeah, it's just made for hardware, or it's just made for VMs. No, it's made for everything. So it's made for physical hardware. It's also made, but you can also install it in a virtual machine. As we said, as Christian showed you, he created a virtual machine for Nano Server, so he created a Nano virtual machine. And it also will be available in Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers as well. Okay. Then there are some other things you can do. Oh, sorry about that. There will be still things they add to it. And you can, if you have tested the new PowerShell version, for example, you have seen that you have like package management in there. You can like other operating system already had before. And you can like go and list packages and then say install packages from a web repository like Chocolaty and others. And that's really cool. And that will be part in the future of Nano Server. So let's have a little look at how things compare to Server Core, right? Or Windows Server, at least. So the numbers we have here, they compared it to the releases they had in 2014. So these are some security patches here. So important security patches for Windows full server was 26. And you can see Nano Server only had 9 important things during that. Would have only 9 important patches during that time. You have then the critical patches. Which you can see, Nano Server only got 2. And you see the number of reboots. If you have full server installed, you basically reboot it every month. I have no clue what happened in that month, which is not there. Can't really believe it, but OK, that are the numbers. So think about that for a moment. If you look at that, if you're normally patching the server, you only had 3 reboots during the whole year for that server, right? If you think about today, you're going to have it every single month to reboot that server. And there are also some other good things. It doesn't really take long to reboot the server. So in terms of security, as I said, everything installed by default on a system which you don't need is bad, right? And you don't really want it there. You have drivers, for example. And one thing here, this is compared to core server. This is not compared to the full server. I think Microsoft did not make the charts for full server because they're kind of embarrassed how much they would run on full server. So they used core for that.
When you say full server, you mean the desktop UI,
yeah, the
right?
Desktop experience, yeah. Yeah, with all the UI and things like that, yeah. The client OS running as a server. OK, and then you also can see the default ports open on the system when you deploy it. So in terms, this is just like thinking about numbers. I know that doesn't really make it secure, but just out of the box. But it really helps, right? If you think about every port which is open or every service is running, could be used for an attack. And then we have this thing, resource utilization. So I talked about how important it is to save resources. And if you look at that, we have less processors running. And then other interesting part here, IOs for the boot. For example, they basically split it in half from server core. You can just imagine how much full server would be, right? And then the kernel, the memory used by the kernel itself. Of course, the numbers are about to change if they're working on it, but just as you get a little sense of how things work. Okay. And now this is the funny part, and I'm sure Christian will show you that a little bit more. the times where we really came and like set up a server and then start the installer and then get some coffee, they're like over. So setup time, if you're doing a server core on the reference system, they had like 300 seconds for a server core, and they only had 40 seconds for nano server. I think in most cases it's maybe even faster than that. The disk footprint, if you install server core, you have around 4 or 5 gigabytes. If you install full server, I think normally you get, right now, you get around 11 gigabytes used. And for nano server, yes, there is a dot before the 4, so it's 400 megabytes. It always depends a little bit on how many packages do you add to that image. It can be bigger, of course, when you add all the packages. But this would be the default. And then the size in a VHD, again, you have this 410 megabyte image. As I said, it could be bigger if you add that as well. OK. So
it's
your turn again.
Yeah. So, I'm going to show you some things you can do with Nano and probably some things you can't. Right now, I just want to point out that this is the layout of the current demo environment, just to show you what we're dealing with. Because have you all seen the movie of Inception? Yeah? So you get the point, you go in and sort of you're losing track. But we have a physically compute cluster running Nano, and we also have a Nano storage server. And on top of that cluster, we are running some Core virtual machines, we're running some Nano virtual machines, we're running Windows Server full desktop UI experience, and we also have some containers on top of that. But I will be working in the pink area on the management computer. So let's jump right into it and see what we have. So this is a management server. I have installed all the PowerShell modules I basically need in order to manage my Nano server. I also think I published this on a blog post as well. So if you want to follow that one, you can go ahead and do so. So let's just run a commandlet that shows the virtual machines we're dealing with. So the thing I would show now is basically everything SCU related. I will show you from a GUI experience that I have a Hyper-V host here, and I have a virtual machine called SCU node 01. So I will connect here and boot it. And let's see, just get a feeling of the experience here. So it shouldn't take that long. We will see the familiar Windows logo appearing on the screen. And so this is based on technical preview tree. So what we'll see here is that we also can get access to something that's new, that's called the emergency console. Have you heard of that? So meaning if you walk up to a Nano server and you connect the keyboard and the desktop, this is basically what you get. So here I can log on using my username and domain. I know. So this will also authenticate using Kerberos. And what I see now is information about the computer itself. Here you can see the code name is Tuva, so this is running Nano. I get information around the network card, which is really essential here. So since Nano is all about remote management, I need to interact with the networking as well. So right now, the capabilities we have using the emergency console is to sort of enable and disable the networking interface card. So I can do that. So, but at least you saw the provisioning time, the boot time was quite low. This is also running a generation 1 VM, so you can imagine using generation 2. So I'm going to start the second one as well, like this, and let's try to build a cluster. So both of these two are provisioned using the script I just showed you. So that means we should have the computer name object in Active Directory and all of that. So let's get back to this one. Let's pray it's working. So right now,
I should have access to these nodes, and I should be able to create a new cluster. So before I do that, I just want to show you that I can, in order to manage the nano server, I will basically use enter ps session, compute name. Well, I can do it from here, actually. SCU. So while we're doing that, it should also load the available commandlets on the nano server itself. Like that. So here you can see we are now in a remote session. And based on what kind of packages I have loaded into the nano servers, it will define what kind of commandlets we have available. So obviously, I can run get. We have 747 commandlets available in this package, in this image at least. So here you can see I have I can do quite a lot of stuff. This is obviously some storage-related stuff, and so on and so forth. But if I'd like to use this in a cluster scenario, you won't find any cluster commandlets on the nano server itself. So that's entirely for remoting. So let's exit the PS session and try to create a new cluster. Yeah. Can't be reached. Anyhow, this is an existing cluster I have. So here I have the compute nodes for Nano. We can see that, yeah, this is the Tuva. So I'm just remotely adding this cluster into Failover Cluster Manager and manage it like I would do with any cluster, basically. The same goes for Hyper-V. I can add it directly here and do management of the Nano Hyper-V cluster as well. So basically, what do we demo doing this? We can demo a remote PowerShell, but we can also do something else. So right now, I just want to show you that we have virtual machines running on this Nano compute cluster. So it's all working as expected, and the experience is quite neat. So this is actually a server core that again runs several containers. So when you run a Nano as a virtual machine, you might obviously get some issues. You have perhaps people in your department that do networking, and even those guys, they are doing some mistakes every now and then. So
sometimes they do.
What?
Sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do. That's fair. So I want to show you now. Let's find a Nano VM. Let's call it SCU. I will enter a PS session, computer name, SCU. So just to show you that I'm not fooling around, this is Nano, right? So I am using this VM for remote session. You can see I have connectivity. So let's just assume that, hey, I'm a networking guy, need to do something smart, I need to put this into a different subnet or something like that. So I run Netch interface IP version 4 set address internet static 10 something like that, and I realized when hitting enter that this was probably not the best idea. Right, so I can walk up to the Nano server, but again I can only disable and enable the network card. So what do I do? Luckily, Ben Armstrong and his team on Hyper-V, they have done an amazing job. So as an example, as a workaround, I'm starting a new PowerShell session now, just to show you that this one will try to reconnect. So here, I will enter PS session. But instead of specifying a computer name now, I will specify a VM name. Yeah. So here, let's just run this one. And drinking. So here you can see, of course, setting the static IP to a completely wrong subnet caused some issues. However, in this session, I should be able to connect because I'm now going directly to the VM bus. So I'm not sure what you know about VM bus, but that's a high memory channel between the client and the server for Hyper-V to sort of communicate and emulate the different devices and so on and so forth. So they have enabled a channel here for us to interact with the virtual machines going directly through the VM bus. And if, for instance, if you have been using Azure Pack with a remote console, you have also been using that feature for a while. So here I have access, and you can see that this is the current state. The networking guy really screwed up. So I will now run netch. Put it back to DHCP. And I suddenly have connection again. So that at least that's, keep that in mind when you're doing remote management of Nano, that there are ways around, leverage new technologies that we have available and get used to it. So it's all about the remote management. Let's see. Yeah, so basically, what you're doing today through Hyper-V Manager to Cluster Manager is still applicable for Nano in this context. And as you're seeing, we are using Nano as the ideal candidate for running Hyper-V and storage in this context.
Okay, perfect. So Christian just demoed you how you manage a Nano server without the web-based UI, which will be released later. This was really showing, he was like showing you that you can do it. It's not a problem. Remote management is not a thing which is like you don't do it. It's a thing, and it's something you should do in the future, even if you don't use Nano server. Probably just to start managing your other servers remotely. So this was it for our part. As said, if you have questions, feel free to shoot them at us. Otherwise, thank you very much for being here. I hope you could learn a little bit about Nano Server, and wish you a nice rest of the conference then. And don't forget about feedback, right? Really important here.